Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the one and only Lonnie Jordan of the legendary American funk band War, who's coming to the Birchmere Wednesday and Thursday in Alexandria. Lonnie, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem.
Now tell us, you're calling us from the tour bus, right? You just got up from a nap.
Yep, and I'm going right back to nap after this. Yeah, we were playing in Asheville, North Carolina last night. Night before last. So we are moving on. We're on a month tour right now, back to back. So after the Birchmere, we will be heading up toward New York and on and on and on for a whole tour.
Nice. Let's say our listeners hear this and they come out to the Birchmere. What can they expect to hear? Is it sort of, you know, some of your greatest hits? Any new stuff you're working on?
No, just all hits, because I wouldn't want to go listen to any group that I like, you know, and start playing stuff I'm not familiar with, and I'll get bored and I'll be mad. I came there in order to have a flashback.
Yeah, right. Give them what they paid for. It reminded me of I went and saw Bob Dylan at Wolf Trap, and it was hardly any of the hits. So I'm sure a lot of fans will appreciate you playing the hit.
Oh, yeah, because that's what I would want, you know, so I think like a fan.
Awesome. Well, we can go through some of the hits in a second, but first, take me back sort of to the early days, the formation of War, because I know, didn't you guys, you used to have some of the bandmates, you guys were performing under the Creators and Night Shift. Take me sort of into those early days.
Well, the majority of the band, you know, all of us, minus Lee Oscar, we were called the Creators, and then we became the you know, as the Creators, we were young, we were playing talent shows, and we had to have like a green paper in order to play in nightclubs. During the breaks, we couldn't be seen at the bar. We had to stay in the kitchen until it was time to go back on to perform. Wow. Yeah, and that was the Creator days, and we played a lot of parks, you know, stuff like that. But other than that, we became the Night Shift, and that's when we teamed up with Deacon Jones, number 49 of the football team, the Rams.
Demon Deacon Jones.
Deacon Jones. He was looking for a band to back him up in at his nightclub that he had, and so we became his backup band. And I mean, we did a lot of other stuff, but just that I would have to write a book.
Maybe you will. Maybe you should someday.
I plan to. I've just given you a couple of things, you know, from the different names as time, you know, went through to now. Yeah. And but other than that, that's when Eric Burden and Lee Oscar and a whole bunch of people came down to see us play, because Eric Burden was looking for a band at the time and saw us play. And Lee Oscar sat in with us, and Eric fell in love with the band, and it was love at first sight.
Now, everyone remembers Eric Burden from, you know, I think he used to perform for the Animals. I'll, before we get more into him, tell me just real quick before we move forward, what was it like performing with Demon Deacon Jones? Everyone knows him, you know, for ripping people's heads off on the field, but what was he like on stage?
Well, Deacon was the kind of person, he did more push-ups than anything. That was the base of his performance. And he did have two singles. And one of them was "I Love and a Pro," and the other one was "It's not whether you win or lose; it's how well you play the game." I mean, that's a long name, but it made it on the record, though. So
that's awesome. All right. Well, now moving on to Eric Burden. So you know, everyone knew his voice from the Animals. What was it like being, you know, playing with him? Because I believe your first album was Eric Burden Declares War. So you guys were sort of intertwined there in those early days.
Yeah, we did a lot of performance with Eric before we recorded anything, and it's just that then, I mean, again, in my book, if I ever write it, we will lead up to the fact of, you know, how we came up with the song "Spill the Wine," which was our first single with Eric Burden, and at that time we were after we did that, after we recorded it, we traveled to Europe and to England, which was not considered Europe. You call it Great Britain, not Europe. So anyway, but we traveled over there, and then that's when I started experiencing a lot of new worlds and the new everything. And I mean, I even had the great opportunity to meet Jimi Hendrix and, you know, and a whole bunch of other entertainers that were living over there. And as a matter of fact, Hendrix performed with us the night before he passed away. We were the
really?
Last
Are you
band
serious? Where was that?
It was we played Ronnie Scott's in England. He was living over there at the time. And he was supporting Eric, you know, because Eric had the new band, which was us, War. And keep in mind that Eric's earlier band, you know, the Animals, the bass player, Chas Chandler, was the one who actually introduced Jimi Hendrix to the music industry. So that was the connection. And Hendrix always supported Eric, you know, anything he did. So it's just that the fact that he liked us and said, wow, you got a great band, man. So he came Tuesday night without his guitar, and he promised that he would come the following night, Wednesday night, with his guitar. And we jammed for a whole hour without any gimmicks or big amplifiers, you know. So we jammed on Mother Earth, Memphis Slim's Mother Earth, for a whole hour. Everyone took a solo, and it was great, man. And it's just that, ironically, you know, he went back to his flat and he passed away, you know, that following morning, which was Thursday.
Is it a little, you know, eerie, haunting, but also, you know, in a way, a privilege? You got to play, you know, his last show. I mean, has that sort of stuck with you over the years?
Well, it sticks with me because it was just like, it was pretty eerie, you know, the fact that here we are playing Mother Earth, and then he went back to Mother Earth, you know what I'm saying? And it's just, you know, we were playing at Ronnie Scott's for about maybe five nights. Let's see, I believe we might have started Sunday, played Monday, and he came down Tuesday without his guitar. Then Wednesday, he brought his guitar down. And then it was close toward the end of our, you know, show, and that's when Thursday it happened, you know?
That's crazy. Yeah, man, you seriously could write a book with all this. This is, already you have some great stories with Deacon Jones and Eric Burdon and Jimi Hendrix's last show. Man, you guys have been, and these are just the early days. Let's move on into, you know, when War really blew up and, you know, and all of us around the world got to know you. Let's go through a couple of your songs. Take me into Spill the Wine and how that one was created.
Well, to make a long story short, and you'll have to read the book, but to make a long story short, I accidentally spilled wine in the recording board while the track was done, and I came in order to help out Eric and Jerry Goldstein, our producer then and now, to see if we can improvise and create some lyrics on the track. And so having a hard time, and I won't get into details, but Eric was in the vocal booth, and it was pretty dark in there, and the track was playing, and it's just that I couldn't see that clear through all these windows, and it was dark on the other side, but then all of a sudden I noticed there was someone else in there with him. And I said, okay. And come to find out that it was a young lady in there. She was the one that was singing the Spanish part of Spill the Wine. But Eric still had not come up with any lyrics. But while I was watching, you know, what was going on in there in that little small isolated booth, I had this big bottle of Gallo red wine and styrofoam cups. And I sat the styrofoam cup on top of the board. And I'm not watching what I was doing, but I poured the wine into this cup, and it tilted over and went right into the board and fried the board out and started smoking. And Eric saw me do that, and I said, whoa, whoa. And then you can see smoke coming up, and next thing I know, Eric started yelling out, spill the wine, and then my producer, you know, the brain started working, and ideas popped up, and light bulb went on, and spill the wine, that should be the name of this song. So after that, we ended up going around the corner to another studio, and of course, I had to pay for it, but I only paid for it after the song was a hit.
You should have told the rest of the guys that, you know, you did it on purpose. It was your way to show them the song title.
Well, it was too late because they saw what I was doing, because I was watching what Eric was doing in there. And I said, because Eric never failed to amaze me back then. He was wild. And I said, now what is he doing? And that's what caused me to spill it.
That's so cool. All right, moving on. Lowrider, how did that come about? Is it as juicy a story as Spill the Wine?
No. When we recorded Lowrider, it was pretty much for the Lowriders in East L.A. And what we did was we recorded the song, and then we went out to East L.A. and with some cameras and a Nigra sound system in order to film some of the cars, because no one in the world has ever seen Lowriders before. So what we did was we bought two rival car clubs together. One was the Imperial and the other was called the Dukes. And so we had cassettes, you know, not manufactured cassettes yet, but it was just demo cassettes. And we gave everybody a cassette to put in their car, and they were all playing their cassettes in their cars, you know, loud. And they were digging it, and they were the first to get a demo tape of Lowrider. And we filmed them, and then we took the film on the road with us to places beyond the West Coast, where people had never seen Lowriders before. We even took it to Germany, Japan, and people were amazed and shocked to see these cars bouncing up and down. So that's basically where it, you know, where it came from. It came from the East LA Lowrider. You know, we were inspired by them, and no one had ever written a song about Lowriders. Only one song came close to that, and that was In Crowd by Dobie Gray. But that was about cars, but it wasn't about Lowriders. No, so
sometimes the best ideas are right under your nose, and you guys are it's who's gonna be smart enough to look down and be like, "Oh, there's a song."
Yep, well, that's how we wrote all our songs, you know, from experience and from the streets. Yeah.
The other really big one everyone loves is Why Can't We Be Friends? A message that is even more timely today. But take me into sort of how that came about and why sort of, you know, it's still so timeless. I mean, God, what, like 40 years later?
Yeah, well, basically because of what's happened today from the time we wrote it and what's been happening in between, nothing's changed. But basically we were on tour all the time, you know, the forever. And it's just this one incident where, you know, that we had to be held up for about 45 minutes before we got to play, because it was always incidents going on before we went out to play. So we were in a holding position until they cleared up the problem outside, because back then all of our shows were mixed. You know, we always had a mixed audience. And unfortunately, some of the people pretty much wanted to rule the territory of us, saying, well, War is our favorite group. We're the ones that, you know, they're our group. No, they're our group. And then there were fights, you know. So finally, we just had enough. And we always had our instruments backstage. So we just started playing reggae grooves backstage. And finally, we came up with this idea, why can't everybody just be friends, you know? And we just start singing this melody over and over, why can't we be friends, why can't we be friends? Finally, when we went home, we remembered it, went into the studio, and we started writing the lyrics to it, you know?
Sort of relate that theme to sort of the band name in general, because everyone hears War, but I believe that original album was like, We Declare War on Your Right for Us to Love One Another, or something like that. So tell me sort of about how sort of the band name sort of ties into that.
Well, yeah, we named ourselves. Well, at first we thought it was too radical, but then we realized that, we can use the name against war, wars against wars, because it was the Vietnam War was going on. There was the Watts riot, you know, pretty much everything that's going on today. So we call ourselves war to rage war against wars. And it was just too many soldiers coming home from the war and end up finding themselves fighting another war at home, in their own backyards. So, and so then our music, of course, pretty much followed the message of our name, you know, that you know, the world is a ghetto, and of course, why can't we be friends? And just, you know, just songs like that that had to do with the message of, yeah, we're raging wars, you know, and letting you know what's going on in the world, you know, for those that don't know. You know, I guess in a way, had we known what Google was back then, we would have said the world is a ghetto is our Google song. Just, you know, letting you know what's going on, you know.
I just love that you guys sort of have mixed, you know, over the years, you know, the socially conscious stuff like that, but also, you know, just fun, something like Lowriders is as fun as you can get of a song. But combine that with sort of the historical moments like Hendrix that you're talking about. I mean, it's a nice little body of work that stacks up pretty favorably in rock history. I'm pretty sure, didn't you guys, weren't you just nominated for the Rock Hall a couple years ago recently? Do you think, what are you guys' chances of getting in here soon, you think?
Well, recently, yeah, this we were nominated twice, but we keep losing to the metal bands. But we always came close, but, you know, but winning something like that doesn't really bother me as much, because I always look at my fans. They are my Rock and Roll Hall of Fans, and one of the reasons I think we've never won any awards is because no one ever knew how to categorize us, because our music has always been versatile. You know, I always called ourselves universal street music. That's how I pretty much tell people, you know, that's how our music, that's where it comes from. Streets, universal, you know. So no one ever knew how to categorize us because of the genres of styles that we play, you know, whether it's reggae, but, well, actually before then it was calypso, you know, but Latin, funk, jazz, classical, I mean, name it, gospel, country and western, we did it all, you know.
Well, that's just a credit to you guys that you can span all of that, so maybe people struggle to categorize you, but to me that's a positive. That means you guys got range. Thanks so much for your time. I don't want to keep you too long, but just, you know, in closing, you know, why our listeners to hear this, why should they come out to the Birchmere? You got two shows, you're gonna put on great shows, you know, why should they come out?
Well, they should come out because our stage will be smoking and we will send them home smiling.